Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGMU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on this morning's magazine, we'll hear what's happening with fracking in Boulder County. The current moratorium on new drilling permits is set to expire next year. State regulators are also in the process of crafting new rules. And at the same time, pollution from drilling in Weld County, the most fracked county in the state, is still blowing west, covering the county. So what are officials, local leaders and activists doing? There will be a forum on that issue this evening in Boulder, and lots of questions will be answered. We'll speak with one of the organisers. Then we'll get another tip on sustainable living in the holiday season from EcoCycle before John Lendorf joins us live in the studio for Radio Nibbles. Then after headlines from the BBC, it's time for another episode of Trends, a collaboration between KGNU and the Community Foundation of Boulder County. The series takes a deep dive into issues facing residents in the county who are often on the margins. This morning, we'll hear from people living with various different physical disabilities and the challenges they face and the solutions that they're coming up with. We'll continue that conversation with a panel discussion at 9 o'clock. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. A new report says that mental health and substance use access disparities have increased in the state. This is despite a law that mandates that health insurance policies have mental health care at the same level as other health care. A nationwide study by the actuarial firm Milliman documents widening disparities over the last 5 years in access to in-network services for mental health care and substance use disorder treatment. Vincent Achety, who's the president and CEO of Mental Health Colorado, said in a statement today that the report confirms that even so-called good health insurance is no guarantee of access to care for mental health and substance use disorder needs. Achety says that the report also shows that access to in-network care has continued to decline since 2013. This is despite an increase in the demand for service. In Colorado, the report found that in outpatient office visits in 2017, behavioural healthcare visits were nearly 10 times more likely to be out of network as it compared to primary care visits. This puts an added cost increase on the patient. Then the report found that between 2013 and 2017, out-of-network use for inpatient facilities ranged 3 to 7 times higher for behavioural healthcare than for medical or surgical services. A Denver attorney earlier this week filed a federal lawsuit challenging a Colorado law that she says censors parents and officials from speaking out about potential misconduct within the state's child welfare system. The Denver Post reports that the plaintiff in the suit is Jessica Peck, who is a family law and child welfare attorney. She is suing the state of Colorado, claiming that a statute intended to protect the privacy of children and families contacted by Child Protection Services in county-level abuse investigation, that actually violates the First Amendment. The lawsuit also alleges that the statute gives the government unchecked power in child abuse and death cases. The statute that Peck is referring to in her lawsuit is CRS 19-1-307, and it makes identifying information in reports about child abuse and neglect cases confidential in most cases. The City of Longmont is looking to extend its free bus service. The Times Call reports that Longmont will pay the Regional Transportation District more than $972,000 over the coming 2 years. This is for RTD to continue providing free rides on local buses within the city. City Council, though, must first agree, and it's on its agenda for next Tuesday. The city's current contract with RTD, its current agreement, expires at the end of this year. Longmont is paying RTD about $310,000 this year for the programme. The city-subsidised free rides are currently available on the Skyline Crosstown Route, that's 323, Main Street Route 324, the Westside Crosstown Route 326 and Eastside Crosstown Route 327. And in the weather today, you can expect partly cloudy skies, but highs in and around the mid-40s. Similar temperatures tomorrow, but breezy conditions coming in on Friday and a chance of snow coming in Friday night and into Saturday and into Sunday, with temperatures cooling significantly on Saturday and Sunday. It is 9 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Fracking is still a major issue for many residents around the Front Range and here in Boulder County. There's still a lot of uncertainty about what lies ahead in the wake of Senate Bill 181 that has tasked the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, the COGCC, with crafting new rules that will prioritize health and safety. It also gives local communities more authority in regulating drilling. But as I said, confusion is still out there. Well, this evening in Boulder, there will be a forum featuring local leaders, activists and officials, and questions will be answered. There will be a large segment for Q&A. It's been organised by several local groups, including the Lookout Alliance. I spoke with Gabrielle Katz. Gabrielle Katz, she is with the Lookout Alliance, one of the organisers of tonight's forum.
The Lookout Alliance was formed in response to some letters received by Heatherwood homeowners about a year ago, so last November. We think about 200 households received letters sent on behalf of Extraction Oil and Gas Company asking to lease our oil and gas. And so that kind of woke us up to the fact that, yeah, this oil and gas development is happening to an extreme level in Weld County, but there is a lot of interest on the part of the companies to push into Boulder County. I don't know if listeners are aware, but Colorado is in the middle of a pretty much an oil and gas boom, and we're set to set a record in 2019 again after setting a record last year. And almost 90% of the oil production in Colorado is happening in Weld County, which is our neighbor to the east. And the same oil reserves that underlie much of Weld County, they come into eastern Boulder County, and so many of us are living on top of these resources.
When we first talked, when these letters first went out to the neighbours and the Lookout Alliance was kind of formed in response to this, one of the big concerns was this issue of forced pooling, where you could have some mineral rights owners who don't want to sell their mineral rights to an oil and gas company, but because other mineral rights owners who are in the same area do want to sell it, they could be forced into a situation where they're essentially forced against their will to sell their mineral rights. That's something that was addressed with Senate Bill 181. It was certainly some of the concerns that prompted a change in legislation. How has that changed, or has that changed, in the wake of Senate Bill 181, which we're seeing now at the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission? They're now changing or reformulating some of the regulations around oil and gas. Is that issue of forced pooling being addressed?
You're right that the Senate Bill 181, it did change the threshold of consenting mineral owners. And now, according to the new law, 45% of mineral owners in a drilling area have to agree to the drilling, and then everyone else can be force pooled. I don't know that there's any actual rulemaking happening around that at the state level. The state level rulemaking has focused so far on other issues. There's flow lines. They're about to go into wellbore integrity, and so I haven't seen that particular issue dealt with. For us in Heatherwood, to be honest, I don't think that improvement to the forced pooling situation is really going to help us that much, because the percentages are based on acreage, and because a lot of Boulder County, eastern Boulder County, is large land holdings, those large land holdings and the mineral leases that go with those large tracts, I think, are going to swamp out anything that a small residential homeowner would own. I mean, it hasn't played out specifically for us yet, but that's my guess. So we're actually looking for other, looking at other aspects of the law that could potentially help us in our efforts to protect our area from drilling.
Well, I know that that will be under discussion at this event on Thursday evening. So what parts of the new law, and as I said, the COGCC is currently in a rulemaking process right now. What parts are you paying attention to that could impact what's happening here or what could potentially be happening in Heatherwood?
Well, one really important thing for us in Boulder County is that the new law gave a lot more authority to local jurisdictions in terms of the ability to set limits on oil and gas development. And so the county itself is undergoing a process of rewriting the county regulations related to oil and gas, and that's the reason that the county right now has a temporary moratorium in place. And we feel strongly that Boulder County should have the best and strongest regulations possible. You know, that here in Boulder County, we should push the envelope to have the best rules in place that can do the most possible to protect the public in terms of health, safety, and welfare, but also the environment and wildlife from the negative impacts of drilling. So a big piece of the new law is to allow the county to be much stronger in terms of its rules and regulations around oil and gas development. The big kind of question out there at the state level is whether or not the new law, SB 181, will allow a local jurisdiction to go so far as to say, actually, this activity, hydraulic fracturing, the industrial scale intensity that as which it's practiced now, is actually incompatible with protection of public health, safety, welfare, the environment and wildlife. And actually, we can't allow this industrial activity because it has been demonstrated to be harmful. So one of the topics that we'll be looking at tomorrow evening will be the potential and justification for an overall ban on this type of industrial activity.
Well, right now, Boulder County does have a moratorium, but that is set to expire in March 2020. I know that you're organizing with neighbours. What connections have you made with local policymakers, county commissioners, people who are in a position to actually make decisions on this? Are you getting a sense that action will or can be taken in and around the expiration of the current moratorium?
We've been providing input to the county regulations. So right now the county is accepting public comment on the oil and gas regulations, and they welcome input from anyone. So we are strongly encouraging anyone with an interest in land use and zoning, water quality, air quality, to provide ideas to the county for how we can protect ourselves from the negative impacts of oil and gas development. So that's number one. They have not released their draft rules, but people can certainly provide ideas and input, and the county has really welcomed that. So that's number one. Number two is to, express our views to the county commissioners, and they, on the first Tuesday of every month, as many listeners know, the Board of Commissioners of Boulder County allows public comment at their meetings on the first Tuesday of each month. And so we really encourage everyone to go and let the commissioners know in person what you would like to see in terms of protections related to oil and gas. And the next commissioner meeting that would be on a Tuesday is January 7th. And I've not seen the agenda yet, but we're hoping to have people turn up for public comment at that time.
As you mentioned earlier, Boulder County, our neighbor to the east is Weld County, which is the most fracked county in the state of Colorado. And of course, air pollutants and impacts of fracking, that doesn't stop at a county line. And there are many residents of Boulder County who might be looking to county commissioners and county regulators to take action. But really, they need to be looking to Weld County. And just a couple of days ago, there was a fire at a fracking site in Erie. It sent 7 workers to the hospital. But it also, I've heard from neighbours in that area, some of them in Boulder County, some of them in Weld County, they said that their houses and their homes, were inundated with chemical flumes, a smoke as a result of that fire. So even if Boulder County takes action, we are still very vulnerable because of what's happening in the county to the east.
Yes, without question. So one thing that we really have to recognizes that even though so far Boulder County has kept out these very large scale projects, we are already being impacted by fracking. And Detlev Helmig, the CU Boulder researcher, he has monitoring at Boulder Reservoir showing how our air quality is impaired when the wind blows from Weld County. It brings carcinogenic emissions from Weld County, and we're breathing that air. Furthermore, yeah, other health studies have shown that negative impacts of fracking happen within half a mile or more of these sites. So we're already affected by it, and I think that's where it behooves us to also be involved at the state level. One of the mandates of the new law is that it consider cumulative impacts. So in the past, wells have been approved on a sort of case-by-case basis considering the impacts of just that one project. But the new law says that cumulative impacts have to be considered, meaning that it's not just this one well, it's this one well on top of the 55,000 wells that are already operating in Colorado. And so that's why, you know, I think we have to fight this fight at the county level, but it also really is important to be engaged at the state level where we can take a more holistic view of what's happening to all of us. And I certainly am not an advocate for just protecting one little corner of the world and pushing these impacts out to somebody else. I mean, we want to think about it in a holistic way so that all of our health can be protected and our environment for everyone.
That's Gabrielle Katz. She is with the Lookout Alliance. That's one of the organizers of a forum happening this evening in Boulder. It's called The Fracking Threat to Boulder County, What We Can Do About It. It's a community forum featuring attorneys, policymakers, and activists. And it's happening this evening from 6 to 8 p.m. It's at the Unity Church of Boulder. That's on Folsom Street. And there's more information about that online at news.kgnu.org. Just click on Resistance Radio and get to the calendar. It is 8:21. You're listening to KGNU.
There are many issues facing people with disabilities in our community.
If I get to school and I get like in the back parking lot and there's nobody there who can see me, it's going to be bad because I need help of somebody helping me taking out my wheelchair from the car and then can go to the meeting. If that meeting happens to be in a building where they don't have an elevator, that's going to be a challenge for me. I cannot do that.
But despite challenges, people are still finding ways to engage with the community. Tune in Thursday morning at 8:30 to hear the latest Trends podcast, a collaboration between KGNU and the Community Foundation of Boulder County. Follow at 9 by a panel discussion, further exploring the issues facing those with disabilities in our community. That's Thursday morning at 8:30 here at KGNU.
And that's coming up in just about 10 minutes' time. As we are in the holiday season, we're revisiting some of the tips on sustainable living from our award-winning series on zero waste from last year.
The holidays are upon us, and with all of the gift-giving, decorating, and parties, it can be challenging for even the most avid recyclers and zero-waste advocates. Fortunately, EcoCycle's new holiday recycling guide is now available and full of ideas to help you enjoy the season without generating lots of waste. Here are a few ideas to get you started. First, don't assume that you have to buy new stuff. I realize that this may be really, really tough with kids, but it's not impossible. Besides, do we really want to be teaching our kids that if they behave, ho, 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 then they'll get rewarded by getting everything they think they want? I'm a little afraid to even go there because it feels taboo, but if we truly value nature and our fellow human beings, then we have to get creative, give of ourselves, and not get swamped by the tsunami of stuff that we're being told we need, especially at this time of year. So instead of buying new products, lots of flashy plastic trinkets, consider giving your family and friends meaningful experiences such as trips to museums, concerts, a cooking class, or a trip to the theater, or give them a special gift card, say, for a night of free babysitting. Visit thrift stores, which are great places to get gifts. You'll be surprised at the really cool stuff you can find around Boulder County. Tasty food is also a wonderful gift. Homemade cookies or granola in reusable mason jars with recipes included are really popular. Also consider giving gifts that will help your friends and family reduce their own waste, such as stainless steel water bottles, chopsticks, mugs, and lunch containers. Second, gift wrapping and decorating. As we usually do, EcoCycle will accept used gift wrapping paper at the Boulder County Recycling Center drop-off center from December 26th through February 1st, 2019. Because gift wrap has a high clay content and low paper content, it's really hard to recycle, which is why we don't accept it year-round. If you are bringing paper to the recycling center, please remove all bows, tinsels, plastic doodads, and any other non-paper adornments before bringing your wrapping paper to the center. And remember, do not put your gift wrap paper in your single-stream recycle cart. You have to actually bring it to the drop-off center. Third, get creative with sustainable holiday tags and gift cards. If you've got old calendars, cards, posters, comic books, maps around, use these materials to make new gift cards and tags or festive placemats. And if you need more inspiration, take a trip to Art Parts in Boulder, which has a multitude of lightly used art supplies of all kinds. If you've never been there, it's definitely worth a visit. And if you're shipping packages, remember to steer clear of plastic bubble wrap and foam. Balled up paper works just as well and can be recycled. Thanks for listening.
And it's time now for Radio Nibbles.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. You with the gravy, Davy.
Everybody eats on Thursday mornings, especially when John Lendorf is in the studio with some nibbles to be had live on air.
It's the it's not the fifth element. It's the fifth taste we're going to talk about today, Maeve. It's umami, and my guest is David Delcourt. He's the chief flavor dude, owner and creator of Seed Ranch Flavor Company, and it's literally next door to KGNU here, and he produces hot sauces and other seasonings. And the ones that fascinate me the most are three products that involve that are called umami. So, David, welcome. Define umami in short form.
Thanks, John. So, in short form, umami is what we call the fifth taste. So, it is a Japanese loan word. Scientists in 1908 named Kikune Ikeda discovered that glutamates, basically on the tongue, have their own taste receptors. And so in the same way as sweet, sour, bitter, and salty, umami is how we taste savory food.
Right, which includes things like meats, fishes, aged cheese.
And, you know, for Seed Ranch, everything we do are plant-based sources of umami.
Right.
So you think about mushrooms, you think about tamari, miso. You know, we have some oven-dried Kalamata olives here that we're going to taste today. Big sources of those plant-based umamis.
Right. So you have an umami sauce, and I've used it just in a whole bunch of different things, both meat and vegetable dishes, and it lends this this feeling of substance, savoriness. It's hard to define.
Yeah, and I think about umami as when you taste a savory food and immediately you want more, that sense of craveability. Chances are there is a good amount of umami in it. And akin to the tannins in a big red wine, it really does coat your mouth, right, and give you that sense of kind of fulfillment from the savoriness.
So you were saying that the dried olives was the best example of what umami is.
Yeah, and what's fun about the dried olives is that I think most people can understand what a briny, Kalamata or a briny olive tastes like. And then when you dry it out, you take away that brininess, you're left with the meat of the fruit, the oil, and really what is a very pure form of umami.
Well, and I'm tasting it right now, and I'm not actually a huge, you know, olive fan. This is different.
Yeah.
There's a, I don't know, mouth-filling quality to it, and a And the funny thing is, if you're interested in Impossible Burgers and Beyond Beef, things like that, this is part of how that this all happened.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you think about an olive or a tomato, for instance, so just a regular raw tomato, if we cook it, we roast it, we... anytime we really pull out those glutamates, it becomes a really big source of umami. So there's that transformation that is fun with it. And adding the sauce to dishes, marinating, things like that, really brings out that craveability, that umami sense.
So you have two products that are available, one that isn't, because it's too popular. So there's the seasoning, which is a lovely powder, and that's got what in it?
So the big sources of umami in there are going to be organic porcini mushroom powder, nutritional yeast, and kelp fronds. Then we rounded out with some seasonings, but those are really going to be that depth of umami kind of flavor.
And then you have the umami sauce.
And the umami sauce kind of got it. Is one of the three sauces that got us started. And that one is, again, shiitake and porcini mushrooms, oven-dried olives, tamari base, really mild, but tons of flavor.
And when he catches up, he also makes a great umami-flavored popcorn. We've just got a few seconds left here. Where are the Seed Ranch umami things available?
So this weekend we'll be at Firefly Market with all of our products. So you can catch us there. Everything's available at McGuckin's, and then King Supers, Safeway, Alfalfa's, Lucky's, and then online. And we created a discount code for your listeners, Nibbles. It's 25% off.
How lovely.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in. Do we have a second? Oh, we don't. thanks for listening in today.
Umami.
Look here, you get the cherry, Jerry. Now look, don't be so picky, Mickey. 'Cause everybody eats when they come to my house.